What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, with our Expert Corner interviews every single Friday. Most of the time, we're talking to short-term rental investors, sharing the good, the bad, the ugly. Today, we've got a special treat. One of my favorite guys, my favorite short-term rental investor, Mr. Jeff Chisholm, joining us. As you've been a multiple guest on the podcast, but it's been a minute, so we need to talk a little bit about financing and paying for these properties and everything else. So Jeff, I appreciate you joining me, my man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Sean. It's been a minute. You're right. And it's good to be back. You know, kind of rate talk is a little bit boring. Nothing's really exciting, but there are some things that we will talk about today that I think have been favorable for a certain pool of investors in this group. So I'm excited to visit about that.
Yeah, awesome. Yep, absolutely. We had the first time, as we're recording this, this is going to publish 2 days after his speaking, but Kevin Warsh, the new Fed chair, had his first meeting today, and they kept rates even the same. I think that the odds are in our favor that we might see a rate hike, but we'll wait and see what the rest of the year looks like. But, you know, those things, I know we don't have a crystal ball, and this is just you and I talking and our opinions on this stuff, you know, kind of disclosure on that. But, you know, you don't, my tune has changed absolutely since the beginning of the year, saying I was hoping to see a couple rate drops. I am not expecting or anticipating that. And it doesn't sound like the Fed is either. Are you hearing anything different to the contrary?
No. And anyone, you know, people that, you know, are the predictors and the experts have really been, you know, looking silly over the last 5 years. And, you know, it's things out of their control. Yeah, they have a lot of data, they have a lot of knowledge, but the things that really have affected rates are the things that you can't predict. So we had, you know, the Soviet Ukraine conflict, and then that kind of settled down a little bit. We kind of saw a downward trend in rates. And then, you know, the whole conflict in Iran has really thrown a wrench in that. We've seen rates come up because of that. So, yeah, there are just so many things that go into what affect mortgage rates up or down. It's no one has the crystal ball for sure.
No, nope. And, you know, it's interesting. We start off with this conversation on rates. Like you said, it's not ever an exciting topic. And something that we bring up and talk about, and but also as we talk about it, like I always like smart investors, the rate is just part of the deal, right? It doesn't really matter whether it's high rate environment, a low rate environment, all those different things. It can affect the environment, it can affect the deal for sure, but it's not, it doesn't really matter whether we're paying really high rates if somebody else is paying those rates for us, right? And it doesn't really matter if we're paying really low rates if they're getting paid by somebody else. Like it does affect the deal for sure, but it's just part of your underwriting package. It's part of, like, debt service is just one of our expenses when we're looking at an overall deal. And so, you know, it's interesting because I think we would both agree that the general public and would, if we saw rates, you know, as soon as they start to have a five in front of them, I think you're going to see a lot of buyers jumping into the market, a lot of people going and buying. But why wouldn't they do the same thing when there's a six in front of it, right? And you know, it's like, because like you and I were talking before, is you're talking about a couple $100 a month difference. And I mean, these are long-term deals, they're long-term investments. Maybe it's even your primary home, you know, a couple $100 a month difference, one way or the other gets a flood of buyers into the market or not, and puts the halt on it. And it's been a very kind of interesting to watch that happen since we really had those spikes mid 2022, and keeping a lot of people on the sidelines, which to me is a little odd.
Yeah, it is. You're right. And, you know, there's going to be some exceptions to the rule over, you know, the history of real estate in the United States, but it comes down to that old saying of when was the best time to buy real estate? It was yesterday. When is the next best time? Today. So, you know, it's always been a proven appreciable asset. And in this asset class, there's a lot of different, you know, components that go into, you know, the benefits. So, yeah, to be in a situation where you're going to let an interest rate affect whether or not you would move forward or even get into the game or be interested in the game, it's just, to me, a little short-sighted, because you're right. We run the numbers on a $600,000 deal. The difference in 1% is about $300. So if that's going to stop you from taking advantage of the tax benefits, you know, buying an appreciable asset, a cash flow producing asset, then this may not be for you. And that's okay. It's not for everyone.
Yeah, I agree. And it's just, you know, and it is, because we are in short-term rentals, which are primarily single family residential type properties, you're dealing with more retail kind of mom and pop investors. And that affects their decision making a lot more than it does kind of institutional money or smart money, right? Your private equity firms, your family offices, your funds, and all those the big money that's investing, they understand that rates are rates, right? They understand that how they affect each deal. They plan accordingly. They underwrite accordingly. They look at all the pro formas. And if it makes sense, it does. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Where retail buyers tend to look at the rate environment and say, I'm just not going to play the game. I'm not even getting into it. Right. And so I think if you're in that camp and you're listening to this, just understand that's just that's probably an indication of your experience level. And now I'm not saying you should jump into something you don't understand, but that should not be keeping you from considering the long-term benefits of some of these asset classes that happen to be real estate and the power of that leverage that's there for you, because this is still an environment that is, there's a lot of really good deals out there and there's not a lot of buyers that are fighting over them, which is a lot funner environment than what it was 5 years ago when there was a lot of buyers fighting over the exact same deals. And it, you know, and even though rates were lower, I much prefer this environment right now on the buy side. And it sounds like we're going to have an extended period of it, probably for the rest of the year. And like you said, we don't have a crystal ball, but we're probably going to have an extended period of being able to actually negotiate on deals, actually look at deals without having everybody flooding into the markets. And I think that that's a good thing for us as investors, because it widens that buying opportunity that we have, which I believe is better right now with a little bit higher rate environment than it is when those rates drop and I think the floodgates open. But
yeah, and I would say a little bit higher, because what we're really comparing it to is, you know, when rates were down in 2020, 21, part of 2022, when they were crazy low. So what we're really looking at now is a little bit higher than average. I believe the average interest rate over the past 30 years is around 6.75%. Today we're sitting at about, it depends on the product. It depends on, you know, how much you're putting down, credit score, but I would say a range on all products is 6.5% to 7%. So we're right there in that average range. But you're exactly right. I think this rest of the year is going to be a great buying opportunity for those that recognize it. And, you know, for the people that weren't in the game back in 2020, 2021, you don't realize that was kind of a bloodbath in the sense that people were, you know, really giving up their firstborn, their left arm. They were, you know, waiving contingency periods as far as, you know, some people weren't even getting inspections done. They were waiving their appraisal contingency. They were waiving their financing approval contingency. They weren't getting any seller concessions. So there was absolutely no room for negotiations. So we're in a much more healthy environment than we were, you know, the past 2 or 3, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I completely agree. I like I said, as a buyer, I much prefer this environment. And I think that, I mean, the rates are still low enough where you can still pencil out a lot of deals, right? It's not, you know, we've always been navigating really since we recovered from the Great Recession. So really since about 2012 to 14, when we started recovering, we've been dealing with high prices going up. Prices were skyrocketing really through that whole time. Right now rates are higher. Rates were really good during that time, but also very low inventory. And so with high prices and low inventory, and then a lot of competition with the rates in that low rate environment, lots of competition. You're literally just like, you're paying over what assets are worth. You're trying to just get a deal done. And it was like, because there was low rates, we kind of justified it. And then we saw rates spike mid 2022 and everybody started sitting on the sidelines. Now everybody's like, the other two prices stayed high. Inventory stayed pretty low. Even though we're getting more inventory on the market, historically, it's still very much a low inventory environment. We're still way short on the number of houses that we'd like to see in a market to really start to bring prices down a little bit. We're not even close to that, it seems like, in most markets. But now that we have those high rates, a lot of people are sitting there, which gives a really good opportunity for those of us that really are understanding the game, because now I don't have to worry about, you know, somebody completely overpaying or making some, or, you know, walking into a deal blind, I feel like sometimes, because you were giving up, you know, your contingency period, your due diligence period, your appraisal contingencies, all these things, which we still need to get all that stuff done. But we were like, hey, listen, I'm going to put all this money at risk just to try to get the deal. And we don't have to do that now. And that is because of a little bit higher rates in the market right now. And so the other thing that has really changed, right? You really became the 10% down second home lender for short-term rentals. You became the expert across the nation within our Evodicy group. I mean, we always relied on you guys to really get that information, understanding how we can use those second home loans, what the rules are, what they aren't. And that was a huge part of the, you know, the business that you guys wrote. And I know still is with what you guys are doing, but there's another product, and we've talked about the DSCR products that were, you know, came onto the scene with short-term rentals when they were early on. And it was a small fraction of the loans that were underwritten and the product that a lot of us as investors were using, but they were really nice loans because they're asset-backed loans. So debt service coverage ratio loans is what they stand for. And just for those of you listening, just so you know what they are, they're kind of what it is you don't have to qualify with your personal income. The property itself is qualifying. That's what that debt service coverage ratio. They're looking to say, okay, if the bank says or the lender says, I want a 1.2 debt service coverage ratio, if that property is, you know, going to make, or the debt service on that property is $100,000 a year, the lender wants to see the income on that property at least 120 or more, right? And so what they're looking at is saying, I don't really care what Sean's income is. I care, does this property generate enough revenue to cover the debt service? And so very attractive type of a product for an investor. The hiccup one on the very beginning stages of this was there wasn't a whole bunch of DSCR lenders. So you were a little bit limited, but also many of them still do have prepayment penalties were a drawback of them, but also they had the delta between the interest rates was pretty large. It was a point to a point and a half on average most of the time. And so a lot of us would say, hey, listen, if I can qualify for traditional financing, we're going to do it. We're also a very low rate environment, so I don't mind putting 90% debt service on the property debt coverage on the property so that I'm not like you're kind of on that point of maybe over leveraging a little bit, but where money was so cheap, but really the properties could support that much debt service. Now rates went up, but also as short-term rentals, the asset class has grown so large, it's become very, very mainstream. A lot of the institutional money said, how can we get into this game? They're not going to get into the game by going and buying these properties. It's not what they do. And it's very hard to go place lots of money on short-term rentals. You can't go place $100 million. You have to buy a whole bunch of properties to do that. So the institutional money is saying, hey, why don't we come in as lenders? So that environment has gotten, that product's gotten a lot more competitive. There's a lot better options. And you were telling me, you know, now your ratio of traditional versus debt service coverage ratio loans, the DSCR loans, that has grown significantly and due in part for one, the rates going up a little bit, the delta shrinking between those things, but also that it mostly because it's gotten a lot more competitive, right? There's a lot more money available in that product.
Yeah, competition is good in a lot of different areas, and this is one example of that. So yeah, you're right. 3 or 4 years ago, there were not a lot of players in the space as far as investors buying these loans, but they became really popular really fast. And so, you know, you saw these investors say, oh, wow, what are we going to do here? Let's raise rates. We'll kind of slow down the flow. And then these institutional investors came in, more institutional investors came in, the big banks, you know, hedge funds, a lot of different players wanted a piece of the pie. And so that competition drove down rates. So the conversation used to be, well, we've got this great product. You don't qualify for that 10% down second home occupancy loan, but we've got this DSCR loan. The downsides are, you know, 20% down payment. The rate's going to be about 2% higher than what you could get on that conventional loan. But that conversation has changed. You know, in a lot of cases, we're seeing rates lower on the DSCR than that 10% down conventional loan. So yeah, it's turned into a really good opportunity for people because, you know, the frustration that I would get from self-employed people, which are typically the clients who are going to take advantage of that product, because on a tax return, they're going to write off as much as they possibly can. And that's on a conventional loan. That's what's being used to show income. So, you know, not strong from that standpoint. But on the DSCR loan, we're not using personal income to qualify you. So that DSCR becomes a good outlet. But those business owners, self-employed people felt like they were getting kind of, you know, the raw end of the deal because it's, gosh, I've got to put more down and then I'm getting a higher interest rate. And some of them are used to that. Some of them are used to business loans, you know, commercial loans where there's different terms. It's not always a 30-year fixed rate. It's a balloon rate. They're paying a higher rate. So some of them are used to that, but it still doesn't taste, you know, it's not palatable. It doesn't leave a good taste in your mouth. So that script has kind of flipped now to where they're getting some of these better opportunities from a rate standpoint.
Yeah, it's really interesting how that has changed. Is now, you know, originally being kind of a secondary option if you didn't qualify or you couldn't make the traditional financing work, you would roll to the DSCR to get the deal done. Now it's saying, hey, listen, this is so competitive that we're going to look at it and compare both of them side by side and see which one's the best, right? Because it's not necessarily a secondary option anymore.
Yeah, and Sean, I want to get a point in before we miss it, because I think this has kind of led to some predatory lending, in my opinion. So I was talking to a guy a couple of days ago. You know, he's buying in the Smokies. He's, you know, $500,000. And he had talked to another lender, and he was sure that he was going the DSCR route. And I asked him, well, tell me, you know, what you see the advantages of that are. And he said, well, you know, it's rate. You know, they let me know that's where the best rates are. Really sold me on the fact that I'm a DSCR borrower. And so I started asking some questions. Tell me about your income sources. You know, tell me a little bit about your debt load. And really what he described for me was the ideal conventional buyer, the 10% down second home occupancy loan. So what I'm seeing is back in 2023, the big guys, Fannie, Freddie, to deter people from buying in this asset class because they felt like people were buying what would be people's primary residences, they raised the fees and the rates on that second home occupancy loan because they used to be, with Fannie and Freddie, those rates used to be right in line with what you would get on a primary residence. And they changed this rule, and overnight rates went up 1%, and the cost went up about 200-300%, to the point where some lenders couldn't even pass the fees test. And so they were telling people, I don't even have that loan anymore. So that's going to be about 98% of the lending world is selling that loan to Fannie and Freddie. So now they're telling people, well, your best option is a DSCR loan because of what they have with that 10% down second home occupancy loan. So what I've had to find in this space is, you know, we had to find investors that had that similar product and pricing to what we had prior to the 2023 change, which is what I do have because it is the majority of my business. So people want to be really careful if someone... They feel like someone is leading them to a DSCR loan, especially if you're a W-2 wage earner. or you have strong income on a tax returns, you've done conventional lending in the past. Now, all of a sudden, someone tells you, you should be using this, you know, kind of alternative lending product.
Yeah, I totally agree. You're exactly right. And something that a lot of times we don't think about as buyers is, you know, they might just be leading you to a product because they don't have the other product, right? And it doesn't mean that what they have is the best product for you. It means that you got to do a little bit more research, which is why we always send our entire Vodacy family, everybody who's listening to you guys at STR Home Financing. And so those, if you guys, you know, you can easily find Jeff and his team at strhomefinancing.com, set up a consultation, but to find out what the best products are. And you guys really strictly work with investors in the short-term rental space, and you understand, and you're always searching for those products that, you know, whether you're traditional products, full doc products, whether it's the DSCR products, to make sure that we have choices as buyers to find the best lending product for us as investors. And I know the answer to this, do you have a favorite loan that you think works more than others, or is it very much specifically to whatever that person's situation is?
Well, I mean, it's very specific, but I would say, and it lines up with the makeup of who are W-2 wage earners and who are business owners in the United States. And I'm kind of pulling this out of the air, but I think it's probably 90% W-2, 10% business owners. I could be wrong, but the numbers that I see on our side, you know, from a lending standpoint, are about 90% of my clients use that 10% down second home occupancy loan because they are W-2 wage earners. They, you know, qualify for conventional lending. But it's just more palatable for people. It's more reasonable. It's more feasible. It's more doable, more comfortable to only have to put down 10%. And there's really not a lot of trade-offs. People may ask me, well, is there still PMI? Yes, but the rate is still relatively low on that PMI because it's an owner-occupied property as a second home. So, you know, we're talking about maybe $100 a month for that PMI on a $600,000 loan amount. So that math makes more sense than putting down 20%. So yeah, it's still by far the most utilized product.
How, and I know this is very time sensitive, this kind of, but as we are today, based on the products you guys are seeing with your second home occupancy loan versus the DSCR loans that you're underwriting, we know it's higher down payments. We know it's, you know, going to be a higher interest rate, prepayment penalties. What are some of the trade-offs between the two, right? And so, you know, like, what does that delta look like currently between those two types of products?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like we said earlier, we've seen an improvement with the rate opportunity. So that's made the DSCR loan more palatable. So it really comes down to cash outlay. What am I more comfortable with putting down? So, you know, you are putting yourself in a position where you have a stronger equity position up front when you put that 20% down. Of course, it's going to be a lower payment because the loan amount's less. There's no PMI. So really, it's just a matter of your means. Do you have that 20%? Does that make it comfortable? But I don't think that should be the deciding factor on moving forward with moving on a property or a deal. Because it comes down, do the numbers work? Do they work at 10% down? If they do, then just go, just do. Because if you're going to wait until you save the 20%, that's not predictable when that could happen or if it could happen.
Yep, I agree. I mean, I think you're right. It comes down to, is that money there? Would you, like, what do you plan to use it for? Where do you want to allocate it, right? And if you don't have it and the deal works at 10% down, like, why wait on a deal, right? And the other thing is, the less, I mean, the economics are, the less you put down, the more leverage you have with the debt service that's on there. Like, if a property goes up 5% a year and I put 20% down, like $100,000 down on a $500,000 piece of property, it goes up 5% a year, I got a 5x return on that 5% by putting 20% down, right? So I got that property went up to 525. So I made 25K on my $100,000. If I only put 10% in that, I got a 10x return on that, right? So all of a sudden that property goes up to that same 525, but I only put 50 grand in. I just got a 50% return on my investment in just from appreciation, right? So if the property can support the higher debt service and the higher leverage amount there, your actual return on the back end is way higher, right? You know, so for every 10%, you're getting a 5x on the back end of whatever that appreciation is. So even if you're at 2 or 3% appreciation, right, we're at most of the markets right now around 2%. They're just kind of sitting there and a little bit going up, but mostly flatlined. Not really crazy appreciation, but if I'm getting 2% appreciation, I only put 10% down, I'm really getting a 20% return on the money every year. That's like most of us as investors are pretty attracted to 20% returns, right? And that's on very, very modest appreciation, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, we bring in the subject of, the tax benefits and, you and I have talked about it before. The fun factor, the legacy factor. I mean, it just, to me, there's so many boxes that this asset class checks off. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. What about going back to the DSCR loan really quick? Have they softened at all on the prepayments?
No, you're really seeing that those investors are going to put something in place to keep borrowers in that loan for specified periods of time so they can, you know, gain what they want to from the deal. So it's very common that our most favorable rates are going to be with a 3-year prepayment penalty.
Okay. That's come down a little bit. I think probably when I used my last DSCR loan back in 2022, it was 5-year prepayment was pretty common. A 3-year prepayment was a little harder to find. So they have softened a little bit, but they still want you in the deal for a little amount of time before you get out of it.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Yeah, probably 4 or 5 years ago, 5-year prepayment penalty was the most common. In today's environment, 3-year is.
Yeah, that's good. Very doable. Worst case scenario, you get out of a deal and, you know, you pay that penalty and it's not like you're locked in. It's going to cost you to get out of it or refinance that loan, right? But if you are in an environment that makes sense, you do it, right? Again, it's just the numbers. It's like, what do we?
It's numbers. It's numbers. Just, that's right.
It's just the numbers. What, if I'm thinking about some of these and maybe I'm self-employed, right? And I'm saying, hey, listen, I don't know that I'm going to qualify for traditional financing. And I need to go down that DSCR route. What do I need to think about from an investor standpoint? Are they going to underwrite it for me? Are they looking for projected revenues? Are they looking for actual revenues? Like, how are they underwriting this from their side to figure out if I hit that debt service coverage ratio that they're looking for?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I have conversations all the time, kind of initial consultations where people for some reason think I'm a turnkey, you know, system where I can guide you on every aspect of short-term rentals. And I'm like, no, that's Sean Moore. That's his lane. That's his team. But that is the only time that we are interested in property performance, is when we're doing the DSCR. So, you know, it's the same application process. We're using your personal credit score. There is no debt to income ratio, so there's no income documents. It's really your ability to put down the 20% and then have 6 months in reserves for the subject property. And then from there, we analyze markets through AirDNA typically. So we're asking about property type, property size, you know, some different factors that go into the short-term rental rates and revenue. So we, you know, that's the other thing that I would ask any DSCR lender that you're talking to is how long have you been doing DSCR loans and how many do you do on a monthly or annual basis? And then if the answer is, well, we do these every once in a while, or we'll see a deal come up, you know, from a past client that wants to do one, probably should move on, because there's a lot that goes into it. There's a lot that could get you in trouble during the contract period, you know, if someone doesn't know what they're talking about. But, you know, from a pre-approval standpoint, You know, we're looking at those things, credit score, ability to put down reserves, and then market area. And then from there, it is, you know, send us a property, and then we can deep dive further into whether we look, we are seeing a green light, yellow light, or red light. But typically we can identify that up front, you know, just based on market area. We can tell people, yeah, this doesn't look favorable. You probably should look elsewhere, or it's looking pretty good, but we can get a little more definitive in our answer once you give us a property.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. It's really interesting. When we do our underwriting on properties, I always, like with our Vodacy family, they're always like, hey, I wonder if this is going to qualify. And I always tell them, you know, it's the first time I've ever said the bank is less conservative than we are. And most of the time we're a lot more conservative on our underwriting, than the banks are when they're using diving into AirDNA. And we use the same tools. We're actually looking for a higher coverage ratio than what a lot of times the property will actually qualify for. And so, we usually don't have a problem with the actual properties qualifying because at least with our criteria, we're usually looking for something a little bit, a little higher income than what the bank is necessarily requiring.
Well, and this, I want to give a plug to you guys and to Vodacy, because I talk to a lot of new investors, a lot of people who, they've had a dream for a long time, since their kids were little, and they've been visiting different areas, and it's, you know, we want to own a place, you know, on this lake someday. And they finally gotten to a point in life where they're beyond the ends meeting, and, you know, they've built up some wealth and now see this as a feasible opportunity, but there's so many things in front of them that they just get paralyzed. They get nervous. And you guys do such a great job of just putting those pieces in the puzzle of the puzzle in place so that people feel confident to you know, feel like that they've got everything that they need to be successful. They just have to execute on it. So from deal analysis to just the community, the educational pieces, Vodacy is a great place to be to erase a lot of those question marks that I see people have.
Nice. I appreciate you saying that. And you know that you are a huge piece of that puzzle. Obviously that, you know, we could not do what we do without you inside of our community. One is as both a member investor, but also really our preferred lender for years and years now. And, just your diligence about staying on top of this market. I mean, back even like you were talking about the, like a lot of people that may or may not know the big changes that Fannie and Freddie did in 2023. And they basically said, we don't want to write these loans anymore. We're getting overexposed. We think it's hurting, you know, affordability on houses. And so we're going to really tighten this up. A lot of lenders just said, we can't do it anymore, right? We're second home loans are dead. How many times do we hear, no, but you can't do the second home occupancy loans anymore. You can't get them done. But you guys didn't do that. You went and found banks that could do it and found similar products. And we never even had like a hiccup because of what you guys are doing at SDR Home Financing, your entire team, a huge piece of the puzzle of being able to help these investors really, really line up. I mean, because that's a massive part of the process is having the right financing options in place. And you guys have never sat on your hands and said, no, we can't do this.
Well, I appreciate you saying that because it did not come with without pain, because switching is never easy. And it you know, really doesn't look good either when you switch lenders. But we really were chasing the best opportunity because we knew it was out there. So, you know, originally it was with the bank, and then it was a credit union. And then the credit union said we didn't want to lend outside the state of Texas anymore. And so now, yeah, we're in a place where they do have alternatives to Fannie and Freddie. It gives us that better pricing. And ultimately, that's important to me. You know, it's beyond the expertise. We want to give our clients the best opportunity from a rate and cost standpoint. But it's come with a cost for our team, but that's okay. We're committed to the space. We're committed to the community. And, you know, I've been originating since 2008, which a lot of people will recognize that year and what happened. I'm a survivor of the big crash. And, you know, this journey in lending has been a roller coaster, but I can say the past 6 years, being in this niche have been the funnest of my career by far. Just amazing people that I've crossed paths with, just really great people doing significant things. And it's an amazing community to be a part of.
Yeah, it is. And it's been really fun to watch this asset class grow up as well. You know, it's been, I mean, really, you know, watch this become like something that is, it was there, it was really growing before COVID, really from 2015 to 19, it was really getting and gaining some steam as an asset class, but it still wasn't super mainstream. And then after, like, you know, COVID and watching it just absolutely blow up to really a mainstream asset class, and then watching like the conversations we're having today and the institutional investors getting involved and getting better products and more competition, and just it's all these different things that are stacking in our favor. And it's fun to be a part of it. I'm with you. It's been a wild ride for 6 years watching this, you know, kind of where things explode and where the dust settles and what happens and everything else in between. But it's been a lot of fun, and it's not going anywhere. I mean, at this stage, short-term rentals are mainstream. You have to treat them as a business. You got to get the right teams in place as you're going to be investing into this. Like you mentioned before, there's lots of moving parts. There just are. And having experts in your corner at every step of the process is important. It's why you and I have had the relationship we've had, and why, you know, you're on this podcast as a regular guest, and we talk about this stuff because it's a massive piece of the puzzle. And so, speaking of that and how to kind of fulfill that side of life, because you really need to know, can I really do this? Do I have the finances? Do I have the means? Should I be, you know, am I going to be qualified for something like this? How can people reach out to your team?
Yeah. So the best way to connect with me is through my website. So I built that back in 2022 out of necessity, because my consultation calls would last 45 minutes to an hour of me just regurgitating the same information and just making sure that people were still awake. So, you know, I was like, there's got to be a better way. So I tell a little bit about our story, about our family, and our investing journey, gather a little information. There's 4 videos to watch about the product, the pre-approval process, the value that our team brings to the table. And then you can make an appointment for a 15-minute consultation call. If anyone just wants to subscribe to my weekly email for rate updates, they can go to the chat feature, drop their email, and I can get those, get you added to the list for that.
Nice. At strhomefinancing.com, right?
strhomefinancing.com.
Awesome. We'll put the link in the show notes, you guys, everybody listening, so you don't have to even remember it. You can go click on it, go check out those videos, go put yourself in there. Absolutely get in. You got a podcast too as well, right? Can somebody listen to you talk about this stuff a little bit once in a while if they want to?
I do. 10 minutes or less. strhomefinancing.com on Spotify or Apple. And you want to learn about some different nuances, different lending opportunities. There's a popular strategy of leveraging a home equity loan to fund your down payment and closing cost. That's one of the more popular episodes, building your own down payment bank. So yeah.
Go listen. You guys are listening on a podcast now. Add one more to your playlist and your favorites. And so there you go. But go check out. We'll post all of that in the show notes. So Jeff, as always, I appreciate you, my man. This has been, you know, I know that there's always tons of stuff to talk about when it comes to this. Wanted to get an update from you on some of the, you know, the changes, especially on those new products that are available, but also the products that have evolved, and just really the regular 10% down financing option that's still available, still a really good option for a lot of W-2 earners, and gives you the opportunity to really maximize those returns on these investments that can cover that kind of debt service. And it's just, you know, you look at it deal by deal, but I'm telling you, we underwrite deals all day, every day, and there's deals out there, and there's a lot of them that do underwrite with 10% down financing, regardless of what you're reading or hearing online. There's still a lot of deals out there, and it's a really good environment to be looking and taking advantage of all of the great things that short-term rentals have to offer us, with appreciation, cash flow, note pay down, massive tax savings, and then obviously that personal use that we love so much with lifestyle assets. So guys, our goal here at Vodacy is to help you guys walk into this game with your eyes wide open. We hope you got value out of these conversations. I always love these conversations every single end of every week. Having these conversations keeps me sharp and in the game. I hope you get the same value as I do. If you do, share the show. We don't run ads or sponsorships. The only way it grows is if you guys share it. And if you don't have anybody to share it with, I always ask you to give us a like or a review or a thumbs up on whatever platform you're watching or listening on, because then that algorithm will share it with other people just like you. Hopefully help other people walk into this game with their eyes wide open. So we will sign off today. Jeff, I appreciate you, my man. Those of you listening, the final most important thing at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today. Start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website?
Yes. For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.